Virtue number one, courage. This is the mean between rashness and cowardice. Courage is when you face your fears because it is the right thing to do. A courageous person will make sure their actions are measured and intelligent, but not be ruled by fear. There's a healthy zone of action for confronting fears, of public speaking, for instance, but also realizing your limitations and reality, not fighting and attacking bear. Virtue number two, temperance. This is the mean between physical pain and pleasure. You can imagine how this is a strong drive that must be regulated. A temperate person will understand that pleasure is not perpetual and pain is a necessary part of life. They will simply do the noble and correct action instead of avoiding pain or seeking pleasure. This notion of temperance is a corollary of mental toughness and self-discipline. Pain is often the only path there is. Virtue number three, generosity. Generosity toward others is the mean between stinginess and wastefulness. This virtue is about the habit of giving and charity, where stinginess is not giving at all and wastefulness is giving too much. A generous person will give what they can because they possess empathy for others. However, they will not give so much, as generosity requires the giver to be able to take care of themselves first. Virtue number four, munificence. This virtue is about how you utilize your resources with regards to yourself, and it is the mean between meanness, deficiency, and ostentatiousness, excess. We can see this in the modern day as the difference between want and need. We want many things, but we need far fewer. Don't allow yourself to live like a pauper, but living like a king is unnecessary and gaudy. The munificent man seeks comfort and security, not luxury and entitlement. Don't avoid spending for what matters, and don't overspend for what doesn't. Virtue number five, magnanimity. This virtue is the mean between arrogance or vanity and insecurity. It's the difference between a lack of self-worth and an inflated sense of ego. Everyone has accolades and can claim honor or credit, but this doesn't mean you should always do this. To focus on honors, even if you deserve them, is to be overly concerned with recognition and how you are viewed by others. To overly ignore them, however, is to shrink out of fear and hesitation. The magnanimous person recognizes their worth and accurately represents themselves. Virtue number six, seeking honor. This is somewhat related to the previous virtue of magnanimity. There, virtue was found by only accurately seeking recognition. Here, virtue is found by how much ambition you have toward actions worthy of recognition. In other words, you should have high ambition, but not so much that it consumes the rest of your life. On the other hand, you can't have too little ambition such that you are left without purpose. Virtue number seven, good temper. The virtue of good temper is apparent. It sits between excessive bitterness or volatility and emotional apathy. Someone with a good temper can regulate their emotions but still become angry at the right people at the right time, for the right actions, and for the right length of time. Extreme emotions are an inescapable part of life, but you cannot let them control you, nor can you ignore them. Be level-headed. Virtue number eight, friendliness. This virtue more or less measures how pleasant you are as company. It sits between sycophantism or flattery and antisocial or argumentative tendencies. A friendly person is open and communicative, yet not to the point of catering or patronizing. At the other end, they can resist conflict for conflict's sake. In the end, a virtuously friendly person knows when to compliment but also when to assert and draw boundaries. Virtue number nine, truthfulness. This is the mean between boastfulness and self-depreciation. Truthfulness has to do with how honest you are regarding your own abilities. You don't need to shrink yourself from others, but neither should you seek to puff yourself up for them. The mean point here shows comfort and security in your identity and accomplishments. Be honest and straightforward. Virtue number 10, wit. A wit is a healthy sense of humor, with the ability to understand and know when humor is appropriate or not. This is the mean between buffoonery, excess, and being obtuse and boorish, deficiency. A witty person recognizes that interactions are fueled by humor and amusement. Too much wit and you become a dancing jester. Too little wit and you become a negative presence. Virtue number 11, justice. Interestingly, justice is the mean between an excess of unfairness and a deficiency of unfairness. Too much justice is unfair because it robs you of empathy, and too little justice is unfair because then there is no sense of equality of treatment. Typically, we rely on laws and customs to deliver justice, but they're not always applicable or fair themselves. Someone interested in justice will dole out appropriate consequences, but keep in mind the ever-present human element for why events have transpired. You might have assumed that he would have included traits such as kindness, respect, self-discipline, or spirituality, or aspects that we can generally trace back to the aforementioned Ten Commandments. In the end, Aristotle presents a selection of 11 virtues for which the selection process is unclear, but he clearly struck a societal chord from his knowledge and experiences. To clarify, these are Aristotle's 11 moral virtues. He goes on in Nicomachean Ethics to describe 5 intellectual virtues. The intellectual virtues are less about prescribing a life philosophy and more about how to think more effectively. Those are worthy pursuits as well, but they don't impact our general fulfillment as directly. According to Aristotle, the intellectual virtues include scientific knowledge, episteme, artistic or technical knowledge, techne, intuitive reason, nous, practical wisdom, phronesis, and philosophic wisdom, sophia. Just for posterity's sake, a brief description of them follows. Scientific knowledge allows you to understand cause and effect and draw conclusions from real facts and principles. Artistic knowledge allows the creation of things that previously only existed in someone's imagination. Intuitive reasoning is what we today might call street smarts and provides insight into how the world works, which can supplement scientific and artistic knowledge. Practical wisdom is what intuitive reasoning becomes after experience and practice. It allows you to make smart choices for decisions. Philosophic wisdom can be said to be the ultimate level of intellectual virtue, as it removes oneself from the physical world and examines issues that are arguably more significant. Back to the golden mean. For most people, mere awareness is not enough to make them act virtuously. Consequently, laws are necessary to keep people in check. This goes against intention and action needing to match, but at least it's a starting point to keep society in order. What we can keep in mind are a few powerful lessons from Aristotle. Extremes are dangerous because they trap us into singular modes of thinking, and this can blind us. Moderation is necessary because it allows us to see the error of our ways. Action without intention is sometimes worthless because there is no accidental virtue. And fulfillment and eudaimonia? It's a process, not a destination. Intentionally follow the golden mean and you'll get there as a byproduct. Friendship. Though most of the discussion involving Nicomachean ethics rightly revolves around the moral virtues that Aristotle espoused, he later goes on to describe another aspect he feels is key to living well. Unlike a set of strict moral virtues, this is something that we have probably given thought to before. He is a large proponent for how friendships enrich our lives and how they bring fulfillment and happiness. But true to form, Aristotle complicates things by first defining friendship and the particular types of friendship that best lead to fulfillment. What is our definition of friendship? The offhand definition would be something involving shared positive experiences, companionship, and emotional intimacy. It's not far off from Aristotle's definition, which invokes goodwill, love, and shared values, and, of course, virtue. He articulates 3 types of friendships, one of which is to be pursued over the other 2. The first two types of friendships are less intentional and more about temporary companionship. Remember what Aristotle said about intentionality being a required element of virtue? The first type of friendship is one of utility. In this type of friendship, the two parties are not seeking affection or even companionship. They spend time together more so because each party receives a benefit in exchange. It's a friendship born out of convenience, proximity, or even loneliness. It's not permanent in nature, and whenever the benefit ends, so does the reason that brought the people together. Aristotle observed this to be more common in older folks, though my personal observation is that it is occurring more in younger folks, such as work and school friends. You're in close proximity with them, but once someone is no longer there, you don't feel any type of emptiness or longing toward them. You may enjoy the time you spent together, but once the situation changes, so does the nature of your connection. The second type of friendship is based on pleasure, not of the carnal type, though it can be, but it's the kind of friendship frequently seen among college friends or people who participate on the same sports team. The reason these friendships are categorized as pleasure-based is because they are made during a pleasurable experience. The source and linchpin of the friendship is a positive emotional experience. The parties can enjoy it together, as they will amplify each other's emotions. But those friendships will end as soon as either tastes or preferences change. For instance, what if one of these friends were to switch sports team allegiances? Most of the friendships that many of us have fall into one or both of these two categories, and while Aristotle didn't necessarily see them as things to be avoided, he did feel that their depth limited their quality. It can't be a negative thing to have many acquaintances and people you can talk and relate with. It's necessary even, sometimes, to be able to take comfort in the anonymity of relative strangers. But Aristotle astutely observed that these two friendships wouldn't lead to fulfillment. Aristotle's most fulfilling form of friendship is based on a mutual appreciation of the virtues that the other party values. Each party wants to be close and emotionally intimate with the other because they want to be close to those traits and virtues. Aristotle explains here, "The perfect form of friendship is that between the good and those who resemble each other in virtue. For these friends wish each alike the other's good in respect of their goodness, and they are good in themselves. But it is those who wish the good of their friends for their friends' sake who are friends in the fullest sense, since they love each other for themselves and not accidentally. Hence, the friendship of these lasts as long as they continue to be good, and virtue is a permanent quality. And each is good relatively to his friend, as well as absolutely, since the good are both good absolutely and profitable to each other. And each is pleasant in both ways also, since good men are pleasant both absolutely and to each other. For everyone is pleased by his own actions, and therefore by actions that resemble his own, and the actions of all good men are the same or similar." These friendships often last quite long because they are self-perpetuating and based on things that are more permanent. Utility and pleasure can change at the drop of a hat, but a person's virtues and character likely will not. Such virtuous friendships create mutual growth and are uplifting forces in your life. They take time and trust to cultivate, but produce the most benefit and fulfillment. It's as simple as the following statement. When you respect someone, you enjoy being around them and allow yourself to learn from them. In that way, utility is also created, and occasionally pleasure as well, but it's the matching and mutually admired values that form the bedrock of lasting friendships that lead to eudaimonia. Aristotle found friendship to be a glue that holds cities and societies together. In this belief also contains the message that the right relationships are the key to our greatest external sources of happiness. The rest is up to us by adhering to chasing virtue and the golden mean. This has been 10-Minute Philosophy. From Buddhism to Stoicism, Confucius and Aristotle, Bite-sized wisdom from some of history's greatest thinkers. Written by Patrick King, narrated by Russell Newton. Copyright 2019 by Patrick King. Production copyright by Patrick King.